Amateur presentation.
Disappearing.
Hold on. We just got a notice that this is being recording. Let me say, got it.
Yeah. So we can hold on. I got to get my lawyer.
We can see your face and we can lawyer up.
Excellent. Perfect. Well, it's also funny talking about it because the other day when I was just kind of doing some research, I noticed that a couple movies or a movie and TV show that you both have appeared in aren't available on Blu-ray or DVD. The Wild Hunt.
We only do shit that doesn't get recorded onto media.
I think I missed the title. Which one?
Oh, so The Wild Hunt, which is fantastic and truly underrated genre effort.
I had the best time making that movie. And Alex Franchi is a dear friend, and he's an amazing director. We had a blast shooting that movie. It was amazing. We actually shot during that medieval festival, which was bananas. It was crazy.
Yeah, and where it goes, it's just so dark and it's just kind of cerebral at times. And that last sort of scene in the film is so haunting. Crazy. And I still think about it. Yeah. And the other is Big Wolf on Campus as the series. Chuck Freeman. I was thinking a little bit about Jean-Claude Van Damme when I was rewatching the Dances with Wolves episode and the fight sequence that you have with Brandon Quinn. So
these are deep cuts.
Well, those are deep cuts. It still amazes me. Sometimes I'll just be like at an airport somewhere in the world. And you know, that show traveled so much. And still gets played, and you know, I'll just have like a random person come up to me who's now an adult, but you know, it was like,
dude, last night we were at the screening here in Toronto, which was super successful. We had a great time, but people were doing pictures after, and she's like, "Can I do a picture with you guys?" And I'm like, "Of course." And then she turned to me, she's like, "Can you get out of the picture? I just want a picture with him." I was like, "Oh, I'm sorry." And she's like, "I'm sorry, I'm just a Big Wolf on Campus, massive."
She said, "I'm just a big Wolf on Campus fan."
It's like, hey, I get it. I'm a big fan of this guy too.
But you're King Argyle. I mean, come on, you have to have that moment as well. But yeah, Big Wolf on Campus, like even just the theme song, still iconic to this day. So I wanted to ask you, because Nicholas, you just brought it up. What is your opinion on watching romantic comedies in movie theaters, especially after the recent success of Anyone But You? Do you think that it's important that the romantic comedy be seen theatrically and not just simply relegated to streaming services?
Yeah, I think our experience so far with French Girl, you know, we were at the Santa Barbara Film Festival and Mammoth Film Festival, and watching it in a theater with people has been so gratifying, because you forget that comedies should be enjoyed communally. And I think it's sadly, the pandemic kind of changed all of our lives and relegated us to our living rooms. And yeah, it's easy and convenient to watch something on Netflix or any streamer. But man, it's so fun to watch a comedy in a crowd, because laughter is contagious. And these days we all need a dose of laughter. And so I absolutely think they should be watched communally, and I hope they make more of them. And I hope that distributors and studios commit and believe in theatrical releases for these movies, because I think that the audiences, as you spoke about that movie, Anyone But You, it made 200 million. Like, I think the appetite is there. We all just need to laugh and lean into love, and we want to do that together. So I think it's hugely important.
James, what about yourself? Are you someone that likes to go see the film?
No, I'll interrupt you. I disagree with everything you just said. No, I mean, it's, you know, it was such a trip in Montreal. We had our premiere at La Place des Arts. There was 1,400 people. And you know, just to kind of lean into what Nick said, comedy is best felt with the group, you know. It's almost awkward to laugh alone, but with the confidence of other humans around you, it just is infectious, like you said.
See, it's awkward.
It certainly is. Yeah. Well, even just like doing something like this, you know, especially whether it's in person or virtually, you know, that awkwardness of kind of having that communication and rapport. But there's also something that's endearing about it in the way that Zach Braff's performance kind of portrays sort of, you know, coming into a family dynamic that he's unfamiliar with. So I wanted to ask you, when you're writing a script like this, are you thinking about it from the point of view of not just writers, but as actors as well? Are you kind of acting out all the scenes and kind of playing out how sequences would sort of occur with the dynamics?
I mean, that's the first proof of concept that we kind of, you know, have to throw ourselves into is getting to perform it, you know, with each other. And
it helps that we're two and we're both actors, you know, first and foremost. And so we already have this kind of testing ground where we can do dialogue back and forth, and right away we can hear the musicality of it and feel if it's stilted or if it's not working. So that's, like you said, that's like the first quality control test, is for us to just run it between ourselves first, which is hugely helpful. So it's absolutely, we approach it from that point of view for sure.
Are there actors that you're considering in the writing process? Because I noticed within sort of the reference to Ruby, there's a mention of her appearing on one of Bear Grylls' shows. And I know that Vanessa Hutchinson appeared on one of Bear Grylls' shows. So there's kind of almost a meta quality.
Did she actually?
That's, yeah, yeah.
Well, we had no idea.
I know. You're just telling us this right now. Did you know that?
I had no idea.
We had no idea.
No, we just picked the most like sort of popular show, that, and the idea of cooking steaks on a volcano.
Yeah, we also like, for real, in our casting process, is coming up on almost, you know, 5 years ago at this point, because of the pandemic slowed down the shooting process of the movie. But we had like on the top of our Google Doc for casting dream, we're like Zach Braff type, because we thought there's no chance we're gonna get Zach Braff, but let's get a type.
Yeah.
And long story short, but we ended up with not only a Zach Braff type, but with Zach Braff.
The real deal. And sometimes for us, it's hugely helpful. Like William Fichtner, who's in the film and a dear, dear friend of ours, who we worked with on the sequel to Independence Day. That's how we met him. We wrote that role pretty much for him. And so it does help.
Ditto for Ed Weeks.
Yeah.
Who came, the London food critic. We were like, look. Like, if we're going to do ourselves any favors, let's just put the best friends we have that happen to be extremely talented and who are going to say yes through obligation.
Yeah, but it helps.
Put them in there.
It gives you like a starting point as a writer to have that voice in your head. It's hugely helpful to write with someone in mind, because you already know their rhythm and their musicality. And so it's and we're lucky that they said yes, because they were very generous to come and join our little movie. But yeah, that's a way we approach it.
And then Vanessa Hudgens, who said yes, were like, you have to be kidding, is this for real?
Yeah, that was bananas.
And she's gonna say yes to singing in the film. Holy F balls. It was a big one.
Well, James, I was going to ask, who is Alex Woods, and how long did you take to write the song She Couldn't Wait to Be an Angel?
So my brother, this is a true story. My brother and I, back in like 2001,
he did his homework. Yeah, and I just say, like, kudos to you. Yeah. This is a very,
I mean, thorough. Bringing up the Wild Hunt and Big Wolf on Campus.
And
such,
then
such
to know that you wrote that song with my Alex brother Woods.
This is like over 20 years ago. We still do when we're at, you know, the family house or whatever, and we're playing the piano and drinking wine, we like to write kind of ridiculous songs together. And we're like, we should write a Christian rock hit after so much red wine. And then the Baileys and coffee. And so we did it, we recorded it, and we just giggled, you know, sending it back and forth to each other for the last 20 some years. And then when we finally had this movie and we're like, hey man, there's like a funeral scene, we should have Ruby sing. And we started looking at songs that she could sing. And, you know, every song, even though it's sung by, you know, by the performer, not the original licensing, you still have to pay for it.
Yeah.
And as a hybrid independent studio film, money runs out real quick. So we're like, man, we, you know, I told Nick, I was like, Nick, let me show you this thing that he kind of remembered. Oh, is that okay?
Yeah.
We're getting Google Chrome notices.
That's fine.
He remembered this thing from years and years ago. And so I sent it to Vanessa. I'm like, this is what we want you to sing. And she's like, I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it.
Now, do you see any of that money come back to you or Alex in terms of?
No.
Have you gotten a check yet?
No, I just spend money on the movie.
Yeah. No, he'll never see a dime.
Yeah. Hey, by the way, you won't either.
I didn't write the song.
Yeah, but you wrote the movie with me.
Yeah.
Next question.
Well, this is an important one. And I have to remind both of you that you have worked with Roland Emmerich. So, you know, tread cautiously.
You don't have to remind us. We know.
Sorry, can you pronounce that? What? Can you repeat the name?
Roland
Emmerich. I believe he is some sort of genre filmmaker. Yes. Yeah. Is Bloodsport the best Jean-Claude Van Damme movie?
Absolutely.
Yes. Sorry, Roland. I think it's better than
Universal Soldier. It's better than Universal Soldier. I think it's better than JCVD.
I love JCVD.
It's really better than Kickboxer.
Yes.
It's I mean, yeah, Bloodsport.
Was Double like Impact.
My crack as a child.
Yeah, that one holds a special place in our hearts. And credit to our intrepid producers for chasing the rights down to the last minute. It was a saga to get all of the people involved.
Bolo Young was, you know, it's not just getting the studio to say yes and giving us the rights for X amount or whatever. It's actually like every frame.
Also the video game rights to the video game that they're
inside
playing.
Inside
the movie. Like you had to get all these things and, you know.
And every actor and every frame and the music and the director who shot it, like, man, and the DOP, like the list goes on and on and on. And we were like 5 days away from needing to deliver to the studio and Bolo Young was in like a jungle somewhere still practicing ninja as like an 80-year-old and he finally signed
the approval. It was great,
but we were very lucky. Like Jean-Claude, one of our friends happens to rep him, and also George St. Pierre, right?
Yeah.
So he was kind of the biggest part of the puzzle. When, you know, when that guy says yes, then everyone, you know, in on the rest of the chain gets a little more eager to just sign off. And and like Nick said, our intrepid producers, Valerie Dote and Anders Bard, they hunted all these people down. And ultimately,
actually, now that you mention it, like now both Roland and us, we have Jean-Claude Van Damme in our movies. So that's another thing we share with him.
Yep.
Well, even having, you know, the film sort of reference in the movie and you just talking about the idea of, you know, being very last minute, a lot of filmmakers, when it comes to writing a script or putting any material in, whether it be songs or movies, you know, they always have sort of backups in mind and things like that. So, you know, for you guys to like leave it down to the wire, that's almost as suspenseful as anything in terms of the relationship dynamics.
Yeah.
Well, we were going to be a little left. Like, you know, we didn't have a replacement shot scene. It was like live and die by the sword. If it came down to like, it's not working and leaving,
I don't know what we would have done.
We would have had to chop that out, which really takes away from Gordon's, you know, arc, especially with the little brother.
Yeah,
you know?
Junior and all the fight stuff. It would have been really hard to cut that out. It would have left a huge hole in the movie.
Well, that last line, you know, that they say it at the police academy, it's like, hey, do it for
Van Damme.
For Van Damme.
Would have made no sense.
People would be like, what the hell is he talking about?
Would be walking.
You'd have to redub it or something or sync it in with that. There's something really special about this movie that I wanted to talk a little bit about, and that is the language of the film. It's spoken both in English and in French. Characters understand each other. There is miscommunication, as rom-coms normally are, but how important was that for you to show within a film that is bilingual?
It was hugely important for us. Like, we're both from Montreal, and we both have French Canadian moms who married Anglo fathers. So our upbringing was completely bilingual, and Montreal is a very, very bilingual place. And there's a lot of experience. People have that experience all the time, where not necessarily being able to speak French, but completely understanding it. We both happen to be bilingual, but it's a lived experience for a lot of people. And we thought, you know, all these like tropey jokes of miscommunicating and pardonnez-moi, like we've seen all those jokes. So we said, let's just take that off the table and just everyone can kind of understand each other, but let's let the situations and the characters drive the comedy, not the miscommunication. Because again, I think it was just a bit of a tired sort of thing.
Yeah, like the fish out of water is already kind of obvious enough.
Yeah.
And we're like, let's just make sure we don't put a hat on a hat on a hat. And language is just celebrated.
Yeah, and it was tricky.
As opposed to being like, you know, a point of conflict, it's
reverential.
It's a point of conflict in the sense that everything is understood.
Yeah. Right?
So, you know, when you communicate, sometimes you hear things you shouldn't, or you don't want to.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which made our job, frankly, easier, but it was a little complicated in the sense of like, you know, comedy is, you know, they always say like comedy doesn't export. And we're like, okay, well, now our job is, you know, subtitled, whether it's subtitled in French or subtitled in English. We also had to account for that and to make sure that, you know, whatever audience is seeing the movie in their own respective languages, that then
the other
language lands translated as a subtitle and gives you enough time in the edit room to go from the face to the line and then back up to the face. So that was, kind of tricky, but I think we did okay.
Yeah,
I think
but we it did was, okay. It required finessing for sure.
Yeah.
Was there any one scene in particular that was harder than the other to find sort of that balance between the rhythm of comedy, but also sort of the recognition of reading the line and then also sort of having the moment to laugh or recognize what's going on?
I think the ones that were without getting on the more difficult side, the ones that were easier is when I think you finally just have a scene with the French Canadians, for example, and they're only speaking in French. And so then, you know, like our default setting as cinephiles, as viewers is, you know, we're quite educated as subtitles go with all the exporting that, you know, Europe and Asia, and, you know, we have gotten pretty accustomed to that. So, you know, for example, the girls at the end of the movie, the two sisters played by Evelyne Brochu and Charlotte Aubin, when they're having that chat after the big, you know, the big breakdown scene, and it's just in French, you don't have to kind of rubberneck as much. And so that's kind of fun just to have them play an entire scene for, you know, a minute and a half in French, as opposed to like the bilingual side that we absolutely love. But yeah.
The dinner scenes are probably the most challenging.
Yeah, the dinner scenes.
That family dinner scene was probably the hardest one to just nail the timing and all that. Yeah.
With like 12 people at the table.
Yeah. Yeah. That was tricky.
Speaking both languages and everyone's like speaking over each other. And,
yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Which is literally like a
French Canadian,
a classic French Canadian dinner.
Yeah.
Well, you get the emotion as well. I think like that's the main register when the film is working, like you understand the emotions of the scene and how they're playing out and the vulnerability of characters, but also sort of the intent of creating something that is very much slapstick, but fun as well. I have to wrap up with you two, but thank you so much for taking the time to do this. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. That was such a lovely interview. And thank you for watching the film, and we're glad you enjoyed it.
And I'm really jealous of your backdrop. I mean, I just want to go watch DVD right
what's
now.
On there. What do I see?
Yeah, what do
we
see? Oh, Jaws. I see Jaws.
Yes, which is actually my favorite film of all time.
There you go.
Really?
Yes. Yeah. I think it has everything in terms of genre filmmaking, but also just, you know, great performances. Robert Shaw's monologue, one of the all-time best.
It's insane.
My my wife's uncle is Richard Dreyfuss.
True story.
There you go.
Yeah.
Wow. That's incredible.
Yeah.
Thank you again.
What a note to end on.
Oh, good old Dick Dreyfuss.
Yeah.
Dickie Dreyfuss.
Uncle Dickie Dreyfuss.
Oh, all right. Thank you so much. And